So I think what people don't always realize is generative AI is ultimately a new way to accomplish existing tasks. Like it's not bringing new use cases to you. Like as a marketer, you still have to do the same things, the same tasks, the same content to create, the same campaigns to launch. Generative AI is bringing a new layer on how you do things, not what you are doing.
All right. Hey, fellow marketers, welcome back to another episode of the Marketing Careers Podcast presented by themarketinghealth.co. All right. I trust that you enjoyed all the tips from our guests in part one of our season focused on helping marketers navigate the disruption of generative AI. Now we are back with part two, and we've got some more insightful conversations with more leaders and practitioners in the AI space. So we are ready to jump right back into it. So the opening you heard is from our guest, Florian Delval, and he is the current Director, Technical Marketing Manager at ActionIQ. ActionIQ is a leading customer data platform. Now, Florian provides some great insights and tips in this episode on managing the disruption of Gen AI from a product perspective, which I think is so very important for marketers to be keeping in mind. Now, Florian's going to go deeper into the most important steps marketing teams should be taking first before jumping in and testing that stack of AI tools that are on your list. So as always, check the show notes for links to specific resources mentioned in this episode and ways to connect with Florian. So let's get into it. Kicking off part two of our season, here is my conversation with Florian Delval. Florian, welcome to the episode.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. So I'm really excited to really dive into this topic specifically based off of your background, your experience. But before we get into all that, nitty-gritty there around Gen AI, maybe take a few minutes and walk us through your marketing career. How did you get started in a path in marketing, product marketing, and then how did that lead you to the position that you're in today?
Yeah, so maybe it's not a typical path, I would say. I started my career in engineering as a software developer. But what's maybe interesting on connecting it back to product marketing is at the time, I loved technology and software, but also loved creativity. I was a big fan of Photoshop and Always Elements. So when I was looking for my first job, I was actually looking for what I was calling myself, in a sense, a creative engineering position. Along the way, I switched to different roles, staying in B2B software, but what I ended up in product marketing is kind of connected, in a sense. Like the product part of product marketing relies back to my engineering roots, but the creativity is in the marketing side of it. I've been in product marketing for the past 4 years, and it's been an exciting opportunity, which I think is also unique, right? Because my career has always been around technologies that support marketers from the very beginning, even when I was developing software. So by having the technical roots, technical understanding, but also developing tools to support marketers, it was a natural evolution and a very exciting one.
Yeah, and I think that's a good perspective because, we talk about marketing careers all the time. We talk about how individuals get into marketing careers, and we've heard everything. I mean, from English professors to accounting majors to even engineers, like you're saying, which makes complete sense from a product marketing standpoint because you have that familiarity from the technical side, and then it's transferring that into the product side. So When you think about the role you have today with ActionIQ, and I'd like to ask this of all of our guests here, you know, how do you describe what you do? Because we know what product marketing is, but how do you describe what you do maybe to someone that has no idea about marketing, or maybe friends and family that are catching up with you and they say, Florian, what is it you do again? How do you describe what you do in your current role?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the answers will always vary. As a product marketer, I will always switch my answer based on who I'm talking to, right? If I'm talking to a family or to a marketer or to an engineer, I'm not going to present it the same way. On something I discovered very quickly in product marketing is the reality of the day-to-day job is also different in every organization and every team, and even individuals within a team. But going back to your question, the way I usually describe it to people less familiar is I link it back a lot to education. What I'm doing is educating people, educating the market on helping simplify complex elements. Technology is complex. A lot of vendors are saying they're doing the same things. How do we help demystify all these elements? How do we help buyers make the right decision? Because even when they buy your software, if they're not buying the software for the right reasons in the right place, they're going to churn ultimately. So you want to make sure you give the right education, you get the right clients coming to you. And I think like if you educate properly, if you show that you really have empathy towards the people you're trying to sell to, your product marketing goals, pipelines, and all this will come along.
Nice. And I like how you set that up in terms of if you can have a great product, but if the wrong person buys it or invests in it, and then they realize, wait a minute, I didn't need all of this, or it doesn't do what I thought it would do, then you're right. Then you're going to be impacting the churn, which is never a good thing, especially in the B2B software space. So maybe we'll help provide some context for later in the conversation. Maybe give a brief description of what Action IQ does and what sort of problems that it solves.
Yeah, totally. So we're a software for business users and marketers and advertisers, actually. Really, the idea of Action IQ and the reason it exists is organizations are collecting a lot of data around customers, but data that are just stored in IT systems, it's a cost for an organization. What we want is to transform it from a cost to revenue generation. And so what we do is we help democratize the access to that customer data by providing a UI that business users, marketers can access, can use without having deep SQL knowledge or expertise. So it's really this notion of providing tools that IT believes in, meaning it's going to meet their security requirements, controls, but provide elements to business users, provide that data to business users. And it's really getting IT and marketing teams together.
IT and marketing teams together so that, I like how you said that, so that the investment in managing that data is not a cost, but it's understanding how to turn that information into revenue for your clients. Yeah,
exactly. What happens often is IT wants to build tools in-house. They love building tools. That's what they like to do. What they don't like to do is build interface for business users. So what we're trying is really to add value to your existing investments, to your existing IT investments. And we can plug in different ways in a stack. And ultimately, the use cases we solve for that I didn't touch on yet is everything around the customer experience notion. It's all the touch points that you have as a consumer when you interact with a brand. From the very first interaction, going on LinkedIn for a B2B brand or on Facebook, so the first ad you will see, the first touch point with a brand, to the first visit on your website, to the conversion of that user onto the email communications, on different channel communications you would have along the journey, all the way to trying to predict and prevent churn from these customers.
Right. So even just setting the stage there in terms of what you're providing solution-wise to these businesses, we'll dive deeper into that in terms of how you're implementing maybe some AI functionality to that. So when we think about, just the series here that we're looking to cover about disruption, and clearly we can all agree that even just the words AI cause a lot of people to act differently or react differently. And we want to cover it and talk to experts like yourself on, tips, insights, anecdotes, cautionary tales, anything you feel relevant here. We want our audience to be able to better navigate this entire disruption, whether it's from the entry level standpoint all the way to the C-suite and above. Let's see if we can't dive into some insights here to help them. So to set some context, and I'd like to do this just to get your perspective from your perspective and what you've done, how would you describe generative AI in your own words?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think people quite often confuse AI and generative AI. And I've seen even vendors trying to muddy the water, on this topic. I like to start by describing the different facets of AI in a sense. There is, I don't like calling it AI, but descriptive analytics, which is looking at data from the past. So it's really using information of the past. You have predictive AI, which is looking at data from the future, in sense, making prediction on the future. And you have another aspect, which is prescriptive AI. On that, what that is using both descriptive and predictive information to make decisions. And generative AI is really the new kid in the house here. And it's totally different and it's in a new facet. It's not replacing any others. It's about helping generating information. And that can come in different ways. It can be text, images, etc. But the idea is creating some sort of content. And we can certainly double click if you'd like.
Right. So that I love that breakdown, because I don't think there's a lot of people that really understood or understands that there are the predictive, prescriptive forms of AI. Because I think we've all experienced them. We just didn't know which ones we were tapping into. Absolutely. And then the way you frame generative AI, you know, absolutely. And I think we're all connecting the dots in our head and saying, yes, we've used those tools to create the content, to create the summaries, to create the images and videos and things like that. So that's a great foundation piece here to set the context for generative AI. Now, moving into that, in terms of what you're seeing in your current role, what are some of those disruptive moments that have caused the clients that come to you as a solution, or what are the disruptive moments you see that causes maybe caused you as product owners to implement more AI generated things? I'm just looking for, what are the examples of the disruptive moments that caused you or your clients to say, hey, we've got to get smarter about this. I'm just curious if you've seen anything or can recall any disruptive moments, examples of disruptive moments that you've seen or your clients have seen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the rollout of ChatGPT in November of last year is certainly the biggest disruptive moment, right? It came almost, for most people, out of nowhere, right? On very early this year, that's in 2023, that's when people started to wonder and test out this. But I would say the first-hand experience was as a consumer. And it took a few weeks and months before people start to switch their mind on being, okay, what does it actually mean as a professional in my business, as a marketer, as a lawyer, as anything you are in your career? But ChatGPT's rollout is really the disruptive moment, I think, for the world.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take a quick step back on talking about a disruptive moment for myself and our company, actually, because sure. I thought it was interesting. A month before the rollout of ChatGPT, I actually experienced with another tool, generative AI tool. And the reason for me exploring that was our resource challenges. We had lost our content marketer, and we were looking for ways to still keep up with the frequency of content we wanted to roll out. And so I suggested my CMO, why don't we explore the progress around AI? Why don't we look at what could be done there? And so I took a subscription for one of his existing tools, and I tested it out. I was like, okay, let's see if he can write a blog. But my content is usually very technical. It was a disaster, let's be honest. I was hoping to get somewhere, and it didn't work. It's not surprising at the end of the day, but I was glad to have done that test and bring back that knowledge. And despite all that failure for blog on the type of content I personally own, I still suggested our team responsible for social to take a look at it. I was like, well, maybe for shorter content, less specific content, it can still help us. But all that was for me one of those moments, and it was a month before ChatGPT came out in the world.
No, that's a good perspective, because I think we all can remember the time and place. It's almost like, you know, you can almost think about the time, for those who can remember, when you first were introduced to the internet. I mean, it's almost that disruptive to say, hey, wait a minute, this is going to change a lot of things, I think. And then as the months went on, you started to tinker and play with it more and realize, holy crap, this could be something that can significantly impact whatever everyone realized in that space. But, you know, I think about in your case where you're saying, hey, you know, you had to find a solution to a problem, which was, I have to create content at a certain pace here or a certain consistency that can't take 8 to 10 hours per blog post. It's got to be more efficient than that. And therefore you came up and found those tools. Is there any specific, when you think about, like, you know, when we think about day-to-day in your role, not just with your team or with the product team, but also with what you hear from your clients, what are some of the use cases that you can pinpoint and say, now, it could be AI, it could be generative AI, whatever you're most familiar with, but what are some specific use cases that you're seeing in your marketing day-to-day that are providing value?
Yeah. What people don't always realize is generative AI is ultimately a new way to accomplish existing tasks. Like it's not bringing new use cases to you. Like as a marketer, you still have to do the same things, the same tasks, the same content to create, the same campaigns to launch. Generative AI is bringing a new layer on how you do things, not what you're doing. And I think it's an important distinction for people to realize. So when we talk about disruption, it's really not a disruption of I'm going to stop doing what I used to do. It's just I'm going to do differently what I used to do.
Got it. And in that, I like how you phrase that, a different layer, another layer added to the way you added to things you're currently doing. Are there things happening inside your platform that with the use of AI are now providing more benefit to your customers?
Yeah, 100%. We're exploring different parts of the platform, different aspects where generative AI can help. But I can give you an example that I thought was the most interesting is sure. In marketing technology, or taking even a step back, when you want to build a campaign on reach your customers, what you need is an audience, like a list of people you want to reach out to. Before marketing technology existed, the way this was done is asking your IT organization to write a SQL query in a database, pull these customers, and then you can reach out to them. So it requires SQL expertise. It takes time. It's not great. But the way marketers were doing that is writing a ticket, like a Jira ticket, for example. They're using their own words to describe who they want to target. IT translate that, write a SQL query, and then push the list. Then marketing technology came around. It was the first disruption. And what he allowed it is marketers to build these lists, these audiences themselves. They don't need to rely on IT anymore. They can go in a tool, click left, right, drag, drop, and build these audiences themselves. The great benefit is efficiency. They just accelerate the pace. They don't have to wait on the turnaround for these Jira tickets. The challenge that people sometimes underestimate is to build it yourself, you still need to understand the underlying data. You need to understand the data model from your team to know which attributes, where is my email address in my list? Where is the purchase information for my customers? So that you can build that audience yourself. So you removed the friction on the time to turn around the request, but you added some level of data expertise required to the marketing team. And that's why we have roles like marketing ops, where they are a little more technical and can still be in between. One of the opportunities that I think will totally disrupt these two paradigms is with generative AI. What you could imagine is just blend these previous two options. What about you're writing your request the way you were writing a Jira ticket at the time, but instead of waiting on IT, the software will translate that request into a SQL by itself and return that audience. So you don't need to understand yourself the data anymore. You can have both the benefit of a Jira ticket and the benefits of a MarTech tool.
And I think those that know, if there's an opportunity to eliminate Jira tickets, that's a good thing. just from the standpoint of steps in a process, where here's a use case where AI can help to simplify, to streamline, you know, something to take two steps or fewer steps instead of more steps.
Here it's even reducing the barrier of requiring to understand the data on some of the technical decisions from your organizations in order to be able to access that information.
That's good insight, because you know, if you think through that and play that out a couple of more iterations down the road, which we'll talk about after the break, it starts to make you wonder about what's the impact to the teams. Mm-hmm. What's the impact to departments? But we'll cover that after the break here. One last question here. You know, something that's important that I hear a lot in conversation with marketers in this space is, you know, for whatever reason, there are some companies that aren't necessarily there yet. Like maybe they haven't adopted the idea that, yes, this is something that every company, no matter what you do, B2B, B2C, what have you, no matter what department you're in, marketing included, there is a value, can be a value of incorporating AI into your organization. So what are your tips for that marketer that's sitting in an organization that hasn't gotten there yet? They're trying to get caught up, but for some reason, the C-level or the stakeholders are just not bought in. What have you found that works, or what's your advice to that marketer to say, hey, try this in order to get your C-level on board with investing?
I think it's certainly a part of communication, I would say. You don't even need to get started. I feel like you don't even need to get buy-in for anything. On what I mean here is the same way I was talking about generative AI capabilities we're going to bring into our products. Existing products in your stack that you use as a marketer, depending on your organization, on our side, for example, we use Zoom to have meetings. We use Gong to record sales conversations. These tools are already integrating AI capabilities into it. So by using these tools today, you're already starting to get some of the benefits of AI without even changing your way of working or your technology within the organization. It's just first step in. The second step is certainly looking at some of these new tools on the market, like ChatGPT on others. But you can certainly get started at no cost, right? You can use these tools at no cost. What I would suggest to be careful about, however, is how you're using these tools on if there are any guidelines within your organizations. That's one of the first steps we took at ActionIQ. We worked with our legal team to write a document to explain what is generative AI, what can it do, and more than that is how can you use it or not within the organization? What type of information can you put in your generative AI solution that you use? So I think there are some steps to be careful of, but there are definitely opportunities to get started and to show value, and that value can then be communicated back to your organization.
Nice. That's good perspectives and some steps to take there, because I'm trying to think of the scenario in which there's a executive level or management level that isn't in tune, not to say that they don't know what, they haven't heard the word AI, maybe in some cases they haven't, but you know, not realizing that it's happening, to your point. Like, you know, in some cases, the tools you've been using 3 years ago are incorporating AI, you just don't realize it. So to me, it almost sounds like, in addition to your steps, there is a simple kind of did you know conversation. Because there's, you know, with any, you know, lag in decision, it's tied to fear of some kind, whether that's, data security or just ROI, whatever it is. But educating the way that you just framed it up would be helpful, it sounds like, to get some of these organizations and departments on board. On board meaning, yes, we're already doing it, but maybe it's more of adopting it into a lot of what's happening in the day-to-day, not just in the marketing team.
Yeah, we'll see. But I wonder if the conversation will really be, do you need to get buy-in? I think it's more about every client and prospect we're talking to today, they're asking questions around AI and generative AI. They're not always sure about what they should be doing or how they should be doing it. But we know that starting next year, if it hasn't happened already, they will have budget to spend towards that. So the conversation will not be like, can I get buy-in? I feel like it will be more, how should I approach it? What should be our strategy? What should be the steps for us to take to bring these new capabilities within our organization?
So it's more of an action plan, less of a yes, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's accepting that it's got to be.
Exactly. Because everybody will adopt it. Let's be honest. I really think that. But everybody will approach it in a very different way. And it's going to shuffle the cards, right? At the big level, we're hearing OpenAI disrupting Google. These companies are having their own space disrupted. It's going to happen at every step of the way. So within your own organization, leveraging these new capabilities and technologies right will give you a competitive edge. Not doing so will put you at troubles.
Troubles in some cases that it may be hard to recover from. Just to that point you're making, it just brings a perspective of the pace at which things can change. That, you know, from your perspective, just talking to clients in the enterprise space, that there is an adoption, there's interest, there's curiosity, and there's budget. So it isn't about if, it's about how we're going to make this, you know, integrate into what we do for our campaigns. So I think that's a great perspective to share. All good things here in terms of just kind of wrapping our heads around, you know, AI, generative AI. Love your definition there in terms of the AI space. So we'll take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back and let's put our thinking towards the future, and let's talk about more about what does it look like down the road. So we'll be right back after this quick break. Hey there, Eric here, and I trust that you're enjoying this season of the Marketing Careers Podcast. Do you have a favorite episode yet? Do you have a favorite actionable tip? Well, that's okay. We got a ton more episodes coming. Hope you enjoy the rest of those as well. Just want to remind you, we have this resource we've curated for you at themarketinghelp.co/GenAI. And there you're going to find a couple of things. A comprehensive list of AI marketing tools, including some tools you probably have not heard of yet or have not tested yet. So you got to check that out. We have a complete AI transformation checklist, adopting some of the things you've heard so far, but also it gives clear direction on things you need to make sure you do at the right time, and can certainly help with any team or marketing leader navigate this disruption a lot smoother. We also have an excerpt from our recent book we published. The book is called CMO Disruption Playbook Generative AI, but we've extracted even more value for you with a free download of an excerpt from that book. So all the things you need to help with this this disruption of generative AI, head on over to themarketinghelp.co/GenAI, grab that free information, and enjoy the rest of this season. And let's get back to the episode. Now let's focus on moving forward and talk about impacts that you see or foresee, dare I say predictions, of where you think this space can go. So the first question I have would be, you know, I call it the coulda, shoulda, woulda moment, right? So even from a personal standpoint, or maybe as you were early in your product marketing roles, if you can go back to that time, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, go back to the time when you first realized that AI is something that you're going to be incorporating or going to be learning about, is there anything you would have changed about how you went about it from back then?
Yeah, I think one important element I would bring up is people are usually scared of new things and change. This is definitely one of those disruptive moments as we talked about, but your first reaction should likely not be like, I'm scared, I'm going to run away from it and try to stay as far away as possible. I think on the other hand, you should stay as close as possible as you can. And so if you're early in your career, try to educate yourself, try to understand what these new terms mean, what these new capabilities mean, where it's going. It's not asking you to become straight up a technical expert around all this, but really understand where can it help you as a marketer, and where can it help you in your career? Because it will certainly become critical and start showing up in resumes very soon.
If not already, I agree. Because I've worked with some marketers that you know, were fortunate enough to get feedback in interview cycles. And even though it wasn't a key component of the position, they were told that they weren't in tune with some of the innovative technologies that were going to impact this position. So if you're unable to speak to even just testing, tinkering, trying things out in this space, you don't want to be in that position where, whoops, too late. Now, obviously, you can rebound quickly, but to your point, run towards it. Don't run away from it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So now the next question here is probably the biggest question when it comes to the future. And I know none of us has the exact answer, but we do have, to your point earlier, we do have some past performance may indicate future behaviors. When you think about 12 months from now, you know, I'm curious in your perspective on the impact that AI, generative AI, when it becomes more indoctrinated, what's the impact going to be on marketing roles, marketing teams? But then also, what's going to be the impact in kind of the MarTech stack or the marketing technology products? A lot of which we've seen, to your point, have already incorporated it early on. But what's it look like in those two spaces 12 months from now?
Yeah, I think within the organizations, within the marketing organizations, it can help with efficiency. It's really reducing the effort it takes to get things done, to create content. I'll give you another very personal example. As you can tell, possibly from my accent, I'm French. I'm in what people call an ESL, English second language.
Okay.
What it means is, as good as my knowledge might be, when I translate it into English, it's not always perfect. I'm not always using the right terms or right word. So generative AI on my hand has already helped me to be less reliant on my content marketer to improve upon my content. So my previous process was write content, send it to the content marketer, and there is a lot of effort sometimes to adjust it. Nowadays, I write my content. It's still 100% my content. I use generative AI to make suggestions, grammar edits, synonyms, and just tweaks that will make it easier for a reader to consume my content. And then I pass it along to my content marketer. And what I've done here is not remove the value of the content marketer, but reduce the bottleneck and improve efficiency on my actions.
And in doing so, has given both of you and your content producer, more time.
Exactly.
More time to fill in with whatever it is that needs to be filled in. In some cases, and I'm glad you brought this up, you know, fast forward 12 months in a world of efficiency or efficient work, do we become overworked? Is that even possible with generative AI? Or is it that we become able to focus on more health and wellness for ourselves? And therefore you have a stronger team and community and department, organization, et cetera. Any thoughts on that in terms of play out your example 12 months from now? What does it mean for your team?
Yeah, I mean, it could possibly mean more time for yourself. Maybe because I love my job too much, I'm seeing it as more time to accomplish more tasks. One way to see it, which was the other part. So one action is more time because you have more efficiency. On what also means is scale up what you're doing today. That can mean better experiences for customers. As a marketer, what we want is always content optimization, personalization. This is what people want. This is what works. But it's hard to scale, right? In the past, we talked about batch and blast emails. Everybody gets the exact same content. Technology helped us to start having some personalization, where today we create segments, right? But ultimately, you can only create yourself so many variations of your text, images, and so on. With generative AI, what you might be able is to still create unique content yourself, but iterate on it and personalize it further for individuals, for who you're reaching out. And so that scale allows you to not create 10 different ads for a million people, but maybe 100 or 200 ads or more without taking more time.
Yeah, and I think that's a great example of the impact in 12 months to the marketing tech stack, is because allowing for more creativity, allowing for more personalization, I think is a term that we hear a lot tied to this space, especially what it can do. But we're just talking about it now. Imagine the day when you can actually say that clients have sent out segmented campaigns where there, when you measure it, there were, you know, to a list of 100,000 segmented names, there was actually 50,000 different unique images used in a specific message. I mean, that's pretty powerful when you think about the ability and the personalization that can happen. And I think that's just scratching the surface on one of many things that can be the impact. But again, if you're a marketing leader in a marketing team, this might be something that you're bringing up in your monthly meeting, in your brainstorming meeting. Because I remember when Google used to talk about they have 20% time where employees were supposed to work on, you know, 80% of their tasks, and then 20% was on whatever it was, special projects, whatever. It kind of becomes more tangible now when you think about the efficiencies, to your point, where, hey, wait a minute, now it takes me, you know, 20 minutes instead of 2 hours. Well, that 20% time may actually be something that's a little bit more tangible.
And it will take time to get there, right? I assume that first to learn how to use these tools, to understand the power of these tools, it will take time too, right? So at first you might be using it and not being more efficient because the output you're getting from these tools is actually not what you're looking for.
We
talked about having that on your resume. As much as we want to say, like, you don't need to learn coding, you don't need to learn anything anymore, just use your language and it's gonna give you what you're looking for. The reality on the reason we have this notion of prompt engineering, if you've heard of it, the prompt is a text you're giving to a generative AI tool. On the notion of engineering means there is some level of technicality and expertise required behind. And the reality is there's models that you're communicating with. They're built and trained on specific data, and they will perform better if you are asking them questions in a certain way. So at the end of the day, you still need to build up some level of expertise on how to frame your questions to get the output you're looking for. And this is what prompt engineering means, and it will matter in the future.
Yeah, and because my next question was going to be, what are the marketing roles or disciplines that we're talking about 12 months from now that don't exist today? And it sounds like, you know, do you think there's going to be job descriptions out there for prompt engineers?
There is already, I've been to a conference where during the keynote, they asked people to raise hand if their title today was prompt engineering. And there are a handful as of right now, but I think it's going to come up more and more.
And that's extremely interesting because I think given the conference in terms of who's attending, sure, you'd love to see hands raised. As it becomes more common, you wonder if, like we've seen in the history of marketing job titles, it gets bastardized over time where it becomes called something more general, but still companies will be looking for somebody that does prompt engineering and more. To me, what's exciting is what are the other sorts of roles that exist or will exist that we're not even thinking about today? Because to your point, everyone's got to get better at the input when it comes to some of these tools. But what happens after we kind of get there or get to a certain level of expertise? What's after that? I don't know. I have to spend more time thinking about it, but good perspective, good insight on that in terms of what you're seeing. I think prompt engineering, if it's a phrase you haven't heard about, it's something worth looking into. And chances are you're probably doing a little bit of it already if you're testing and using some of these tools. You know, one thought when you think about the impact, and again, we're talking about in the future, is there any impact? Do you think there's going to be any impact to how companies or how marketing departments measure the success of generative AI? So if a company or department has implemented it more into their systems and processes, are we measuring success any differently?
I think there'll be the typical metrics, but the way to look at it will have to be slightly different. At the end of the day, for marketing teams, you're still looking to generate pipeline for sales. You're still looking to have leads, and sales are looking to close these deals. But what you will certainly look at is what is a lift by adding these new capabilities within your workday? What is the lift you're gaining? Because some of it will be capabilities within your existing tools. So you could expect no extra cost or limited extra cost because it's within the tools you're using. But you might adopt new tools that will have a cost in order to solve for these use cases. So you might increase efficiency, but that efficiency increase will come at a cost. What you will want to make sure and to measure is how far down the road do you want to be in terms of what it costs and the value you're getting back from it. And some of that is unknown. There are so many ways to use generative AI. There are so many ways to make it higher quality, more secure. And today, the infrastructure's cost is pretty high. The deployment for big enterprises is going to be very high. At first, it's certainly okay to have high cost because you're looking to explore. But at some point, you'll need to be able to justify it. And that will come in your typical numbers.
Right. To your point earlier about how when we had that disruption of CRM tools being implemented, those became very expensive. But if done right, you can validate the cost because of the impact that you're generating. The same rules apply here as what you're saying is we're still looking at the same metrics, but we're also needing to validate incremental costs, whether you're collapsing six tools into two tools or you still need to add that investment into another tool on top of your existing tool, but it better come with some efficiency, whether that's, you know, redundant positions and you save money by reducing headcount, or to your point, you find that the quality of leads can be higher because of the intelligence you're using as part of what the Gen AI tools give you. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay. Now we talked a little bit about prompt engineering. Obviously, I think there's a lot of marketers out there that are doing it, not don't even know it. But if you had any advice to marketers from what you've seen, again, fast forwarding, looking towards the future, are there three skills you believe every marketer needs to have or develop, you know, quickly or soon, so that they're optimal, can perform optimally in the next 12 months?
Yeah. So even before talking about skills of individuals, what I would say suggest marketers to do today is as early as possible, understand where are you in your customer data strategies. Because the reality is something we haven't talked in this conversation yet on matters a lot is generative AI will only be as good as your data is. So if your customer data practices are not in a good place, you are unlikely to be able to get out the value you're looking for from these tools. So the first step is discuss with your organization, understand where you're at. If today you have customer data issues, meaning you can't reach the right customers because your data is a mess at the end of the day, generative AI will not help you with that. So get your customer data in order. It's a very important first step. A second suggestion is within all these tools today, you have quite often the opportunity to put context around what you're doing. What I'm talking about here is when you build a campaign, you give it a name, you can give it a description. I know very few customers using marketing technology spending the time to put a description within their campaigns because they don't see that documentation helpful, but it would be helpful for another marketer, right? A marketer just hired, if he was able to come in and read the description, it would be helpful for him. Well, something you need to understand is for generative AI, these descriptions will also be helpful to these tools. These descriptions will be used by these tools to support business users. So really think about it as a tool that will require the same quality and the same knowledge that a human being does if you want to have quality output.
I love that. Yeah. Is there a third step or that's...
So those were like steps in general. I think if going back to the initial question about individual skills, it's really learning some of these concepts. What do you need to be able to be getting good value from these tools? On the second part is obviously learning how to use these tools. We discussed about it a little bit, but it's how can you use these tools? What can these tools do for you on what shouldn't be used for. A great example, I've seen a few people stumble about the same. Something as a product marketer I always struggle with is finding a good statistics or a quote I can use, right? You think it's very clear that this event is always happening in an organization, but you're like, I want a statistics, I want a report that tells me that. You try to prompt it into ChatGPT and you get a result, but the reality is these are generated elements. They're not real facts.
Right.
So these tools are not here to give you facts. They're not search engine. They're here to generate content. So some of the skills about what can you use this tool for, what you should not use this tool for, will be a very important skill in the future.
No, I like that. And that's all rooted in education, which is, you know, getting your hands dirty and like you said earlier, you know, failing first or almost training yourself on how to use these tools to know what's good, what's not good. Mm-hmm. But also like the step there about, you know, we often forget about some of the basic best practices for using current tools will largely impact how they're ingested or digested by the implementation of AI functionality. A bad campaign description could cost you money by not being considered as part of an AI function, and wouldn't that be a shame? So I think that's a great tip for everyone to keep in mind.
On best steps you can take today, right? You don't have to wait for your generative AI tools to be around your stack. You can take a look today at what you're doing and just think about it. Meaning, when you create a new campaign, give it a name that makes sense, that you would be able to read as a human, and this will help you in the future.
I like it. Now, personally, when it comes to obviously staying on top of, there's a lot of people that are talking about AI. There's a lot of places to go learn about AI. Do you have any top resources, destinations, communities that you would recommend our audience to stay in tune with, to stay, you know, finger on the pulse of what's happening in this space?
Yeah, I think it's great to take a look at what these big companies on big in name, more than in size today are posting, because they're really great content and for leadership content from the generative AI companies trying to educate the market. I'm talking about content from OpenAI, from Cohere, from Anthropic, taking a few examples. Their blogs are very deep, very insightful, same with Hugging Face. So try to educate yourself, depending on where you're at. You can start 101. There are a lot of vendors also publishing what they call universities or different training programs to really get started from scratch. And I think it's great to start as early as possible to familiarize yourself with the terminology around this on what the different steps are.
Love it. So I will include links to those tools that you recommended, to those sources, so our audience can check in on those. But I hear you, right? It's like, if you want to stay on top of things, go to those that are leading the market in terms of, you know, producing the tools in this space. Kind of like back when you wanted to learn about content marketing, you followed HubSpot's blog. So good insights there. We'll include links in the show notes. Now, final here, Florian, would be, you know, just kind of open mic here. You know, as we wrap up this conversation, what is it you want our audience of marketers to remember or keep in mind as it relates to, you know, managing or navigating this disruption of AI and soon to be generative AI?
Yeah, I think it's really about embracing the change, right? There is quite often when there is disruption, there is some level of apprehension. Don't be scared. Everything's going to be okay. Just embrace it. Learn what you can. Spend a few minutes there, it's going to be okay. I know that some people are worried, am I going to lose my job? What does it mean for me? I would say, don't worry about that. Embrace the opportunity. And the sooner you embrace it, the sooner you get into it, the better it will be for you on your career.
I love it, because, and I love that as a don't worry about losing your job. And when I hear that in conversation, I say, if you're worried about losing your job because of AI, create your next job. Meaning, go become like you mentioned earlier, lean into this technology, these tools, and become, you know, better at it so that you can consult and guide others. And guess what? That title that we talked about, that we're not sure what it's going to be called, but it's going to be out there soon. Then you've just created a path for yourself for another opportunity. All right. Great stuff. Now, if any of our audience wants to stay in contact with you, connect with you, maybe ask you a deeper question, follow up about Action IQ, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Yeah, I mean, you can always find me on LinkedIn, Florian Delval. There are not too many of them, so you should be able to find me easily. I'm there if you want. I'm publishing on Action IQ's blog post occasionally, so you can find some of my content there. I've recently started a Substack called Foreign Key. Feel free to use it. I've been publishing about Gen AI recently, but I'm talking about everything from AI to data, customer data, MarTech, AdTech. So a few places on I'm always available.
I love it. And I'll grab links to those to your Substack and everything else, and we'll put that in the show notes so everyone can connect with you. So Florian, thank you so much for your time here. Great insights. Love the perspective coming from a product marketing angle. I think there's a lot of good information here that our audience can take away with them. So appreciate your time today, and best of luck in the coming year with everything at Action IQ and beyond.
Thanks. Thanks, Eric. Have a great day.
You too. All right. Big thanks to Florian for joining us here and kicking off part two of our season on helping all marketers navigate the disruption of generative AI. So the biggest takeaway, I think, from this conversation that I got was Florian's point on making sure your customer data is right. Making sure you have the most accurate information first before you start diving into integrating or leveraging any of these AI tools. Now, think about it. If you don't have the right accurate insights on your customers, well, then, you know, like their needs, the wants, behaviors, things like that, then any prompts you enter or outputs generated from these AI tools may not be useful. So check the show notes on some of the resources that Florian shared and ways to connect with him. If you do reach out to him in LinkedIn, just mention that you heard him on the Marketing Careers podcast. And make sure you subscribe, rate, review our podcast. We'd love to hear from you wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Now, you're enjoying the season, you have a question, drop me a note, connect@themarketinghelp.co. I'm your host, Eric Harbison, and I will catch you on the next episode.